Episode 1 of the Madcap Review is dedicated to the memory of Chadwick Boseman. Chadwick died at the age of 43 following a 4-year battle with colon cancer on Friday, August 28, 2020. Chadwick was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer in 2016. He continued to act in between surgeries and chemotherapy treatments as the illness progressed to stage 4, appearing in multiple films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as well as others like Marshall, The Five Bloods, and the upcoming Netflix movie Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Chadwick was definitely more than just a superhero on screen. He was the superhero that we needed in real life. There will be another Black Panther, but there'll never be another Chadwick. Rest in power, Chadwick forever. All right, last night we got the unfortunate news that Chadwick Boseman passed away, 43 years old, due to colon cancer. He had been battling the disease for 4 years. Didn't say a word. My man was still out here making movies for us while he was fighting for his life. I don't know, it took me to a place last night. Yeah, I just really don't know what to say. I'm gonna hand it over to you all and just kind of give you your reactions to the news of this unfortunate passing.
Well, I woke up to it this morning and it just really didn't seem real, to be honest with you. He's not that much older than me, you know? So that to me, that made it seem even, once I realized it's legit, it hit even harder, basically. Cause I'm like, damn, this dude had a lot of life in front of him. And you'd have never known something was wrong with him. You know, by the way he was going after these movies and attacking these roles, you didn't ever know. And it just kind of puts things in perspective how things can change. And you really never know what somebody else is going through, you know?
I know for me, man, I caught it probably like 15 minutes after it was first announced. And one of the things that I had been, talking about or manifesting on was like, getting to the point where I could, someday make a movie. And he was one of the people definitely on my list of who I wanted to see something that I did associated with him, because I associated him with so many movies with, like, Black heroes. And I actually seen a tweet. It's like, Chadwick Boseman pretty much played a lot of our Black heroes on screen, fictitious or real. And I think there's something that, he kind of like put on his shoulder for the culture. And so, man, I really do appreciate him for that, man. And I just hate the fact that I'm not going to get a chance to work with him.
All I think was like, yo, he has so much more work to do. He was just hitting that surface for his career. And I'm just like, damn, like, that quick, that fast. And like everyone's been saying, like you just wouldn't know that he was actually going through that type of shit the way he's been going after these roles and countless surgeries, chemotherapy. Like, yo, I admire the shit out of him for that. That takes a lot of strength, a lot of courage, Niven, for him to be able to still go ahead, did what he did and go through that on a day-to-day. That was a lot, man. But I find peace, though, knowing that he was surrounded by his family in his passing, though. Not a lot of people get to experience that, so that's a takeaway for me. At least he got to have that. He will be missed.
So it feels like he's been around for so long, and I look at his film credits and yo, we just didn't have him as long as... Yo, you just get this feeling we didn't have him for as long as we should have had him. Think about... They said he was diagnosed in 2016. Since then, that pretty much means that he filmed... What's that? Marshall, Black Panther, both
of the last two Avenger movies, 21 Bridges, The Last Blood. And then he has another Netflix movie coming out later this year called Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I think it has Viola Davis and Glenn Thurman in it. That'll be his last film. All those movies, you know, one of the things I said last night on Twitter and on Facebook is my man was out here, you know, fighting fictitious wars to entertain us, but was fighting for his own life at the same time and never said a word, you know?
That's real.
And just like Sherelle said, you know, nothing but respect, you know, nothing but admiration for his craft, his dedication. It's just tough, you know. He's definitely gonna be missed. Big fan, man. I said, you know, I don't want to just think of him as Black Panther. Cause truth be told, we're gonna get another Black Panther. But we only got one Chadwick. You know, and instead of Wakanda forever, it's just like, yo, I'm gonna be bumping Chadwick forever. You know, not just on the screen, but in real life, it's just a dude to look up to, a dude that you can aspire to be, not just for his talent. But what he did for us on and off screen. So, you know, my thing is, I don't want to remember him just as Black Panther.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's hard for me to just look at him as Black Panther, because before that, I looked at him as like the dude that did James Brown a solid in the movie.
Cause he and I slept on it. I was like, nah. not the dude from 42. You know, I know he did Jackie Robinson a solid, but he ain't gonna be able to do James Brown too. He knocked it out the park.
That's one of my favorite movies. I'm gonna have to go back and watch it now for sure. I was talking about watching it because I was telling my girl, like, I don't think you really appreciate the depth of what Chadwick can bring to the screen. So I was like, we gotta watch the James Brown movie because it's just been a minute. And now it's kind of like moving to the top of the list for sure.
Welcome to the Madcap Movie Review Podcast. I'm Sean.
I'm CL.
I'm Derek.
I'm Sherelle.
Today we will be reviewing 1992's Mo Money. Mo Money was written by and starred Damon Wayans, directed by Peter McDonald, whose only notable directorial credit other than Mo Money was Rambo Part 3. Mo Money was made on a budget of $15 million, shot in Chicago over 2 weeks. The film debuted at number one in the box office, ultimately grossing a little over $40 million in the United States. The film got its title from a phrase used in the Homeboy Shopping Network skits on In Living Color, which also starred Damon Wayans. Mo Money gave us the feature film debut of the great Bernie Mac. Also, did you all know that Kadeem Hardison, Mr. Dwayne Wayne himself, was Damon Wayans' original choice to play his brother in the film?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I would have loved that. You know, those two had incredible chemistry on I'ma Get You Sucker back in the day. And I can only imagine what they could have done in this role. But I guess it doesn't matter how famous you get. Mama still runs the show, and Mama told Damon, "Nah, you can't cast Kadeem. You gotta cast your baby brother." So Mama said, "Cast." Man. First thoughts? What you all got,
bro? You like that? I feel like that last little nugget there is a little bit bigger than just like a little factoid. First off, like having Kadeem play the brother part, like gives that some actual, like, you know, acting gravity. You know, Marlon is funny. And Marlon is funny in the movie. But as far as being able to carry a scene, it might have went a little bit, I guess you could say, over the top. It would have took it just up a notch. But that's, you know, that's just my opinion. But on first blush, I'm still trying to get past that. So I'm going to pass the mic for now so y'all can talk about the movie.
So first thoughts, this was my second time seeing this movie. I mean, the movie is as old as I am, so I mean, it's only makes sense.
Don't do that.
I'm just saying. So,
don't date yourself.
I did it twice, and I was in complete bliss watching it. I had to take my brain out of nitpick mode, though, because, you know, back then in the 90s, the quality wasn't everything compared to what we got now. But I truly enjoyed it. I love the brothers' chemistry. Stacey Dash before, you know, she turned white. That was a treat for me. Even though in the movie, you could tell she was about to go down that route. So we should have all known better then. But I liked it. It was a fun time.
For me, I really enjoyed the movie. I've seen it a few times already. And one thing that really stood out to me this most recent time that I watched it for this episode here, the podcast, was Stacey Dash's performance. To me, when I was looking at it, I felt like she was almost the same exact person that she was in Clueless. Like the way her character, the way that she talked and her mannerisms, everything, she was the same exact. There was no variety in her character. So I didn't see a lot of range. But at the same time, I feel like she was appropriate for the role because she was that girl back then. She was like the standard of beauty at the time.
The it girl.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, she was like that it girl. So I felt like she was actually perfectly cast. Even though her acting wasn't all of that, she was perfectly cast for it. The role was perfect for her. And the movie was funny as hell. So
you basically summed up my whole thought process when it comes to Stacey Dash. In her acting, she has one lane and she plays that very well. Yeah. She's literally the same person in everything. Clueless,
it could be the accent.
Mole Money. I don't know. My first experience with Stacey Dash was a movie called Moving. I think it's Moving. It's I think it was made like in 86. It's her, Richard Pryor, and God, I always forget her name, but she played the assistant principal in Lean On Me. She plays the same girl in that movie, too. So, yeah, I feel like Stacey Dash just got one lane. She was that, you know, beautiful face. I feel like she was the face before Halle Berry came. And then it switched from Stacey Dash to Halle Berry for a little bit. Because this was made in 92. 92 mm-hmm. is also when Boomerang came out. And then there was a shift.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much you can do with the Valley Girl accent on a black ass face, you know, for lack of a better term. Well, I want to come back around to Stacey Dash because I want to front load the podcast because we're going to have plenty of time to talk about her. But so we're talking about the movie. I think one of the things that you pointed out in your synopsis is the director, who didn't have any work too far in between. Like there's a big gap between what we know about him. And if you look at the movie, it's kind of evident why, because this movie was very well written. The concept was great. The cast was pretty good. And shout out to my man. Hold on, bro. I gotta get his name. Who played Tom? Not Harry Lennox. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
That's the homie from Blacklist, if y'all into watching TV at all. And I was like, oh, snap. bro look young as a fuck. So like, there's a lot of like people who just we know in the movie. And I felt like that's like a cool cultural moment, but I felt like everything was lost in the execution in a direction. But I love this movie to death. I'm not gonna lie. Like, this is a solid ass movie. And like Rotten Tomatoes is like 50%. I'm like, really? I thought we would have came out a little harder for this one, but I guess some of the montages and things, they're a little hard to get past. But it's, for me, it's very much enjoyable though. I ain't gonna lie, this is probably the first time I watched it in years, and I'm probably gonna watch it again soon.
Yeah, I did watch it like 4 times.
Yeah, it's like, it's a quick movie, and you know, it's always got a part that you look forward to. That, I mean, even like the action at the end was pretty decent. You know, like, there's a lot of solid pieces to the movie. It's like, it just wasn't like thread together. It's like, instead of it being sewn together, it was duct taped together. That's kind of how I would put it.
I just like to go back to what CL said about the cast of the film. I feel like Marlon's role was toned down or cut back a little bit because of his inexperience.
Yeah.
Just going back to what was said earlier and who the role was meant for, I feel like that there are some spaces in this film that are empty because of the lack of, you know, that brother role being implemented. I feel like if Kadeem was in this role, there would have been more to that Seymour character.
You would have got a little bit more B plot
in
the movie if Kadeem was there. But they kind of cut that down as like a side story. It wasn't even a whole side story, because like, they even got him a girl. Like, that probably would have been more of a thing, not to like step on everything. But I feel like when we're talking about Marla's character, the point of him having a girlfriend only like halfway through the movie was a little weird to me. And I was like, this, you know, in a usual movie, that usually comes up like in the first 15, 20 minutes. So you can like keep replaying it throughout the movie. And then when you say that, it's like, okay, that kind of makes sense now. He didn't really have it for all the scenes. You know, it is what it is.
But do you think they could have, the movie would have been the same if they just had eliminated his character altogether? Like, would the movie be as good?
No, you need the character.
Mm-hmm. Right, like, because I didn't think, now granted, he's not Kadeem Hardison, even now. I don't think Marlon compares as an actor to Kadeem Hardison, you know, but I didn't think he was necessarily bad. I think for the job, for what I saw, with the lines they gave him, the parts they gave him, he played it well. I mean, he looked the part, he played the part well. I mean, it fit him. I feel like if you put Kadeem Hardison, me picturing him, Kadeem Hardison, as I know him as Dwayne Wayne, from a different world, if I see him in that movie, that's how I'm thinking of him now. Like, if I see him there, it would be hard for me to picture him as like a scammer, you know, you know, living at being a street dude. You know, when I'm thinking of him fighting his way down the aisle to go get Whitley at her wedding, you know, it would be hard for me to picture him that same way, you know, in a different light. So I feel like it was probably better off that they didn't use him for this movie.
Well, I guess that's where I would be different, because I think in this role, just because who he would have been side by side with, like, I would immediately disassociated Dwayne Wayne from him, and immediately I'm Gonna Get You Sucker would have been in my head. And it's those two cats back together.
Yeah, that imagery.
Yeah, like, I would have had that. I would have been looking for some silly slapstick type stuff from that. 2020, that Seymour Charlotte dynamic could not happen.
Nah.
No. I was literally thinking that as I'm watching him pursue her. I'm like, this dude would get Me Too'd so fast. If he pulled that off now, what?
Send you back to the projects.
and then just some of the, I mean, just going from Damon Wayne's career, period, from stand-up to In Living Color, And I'm thinking about Man on Films in regards
That's what I was thinking about when he had the scene in the movie where they played the homosexuals.
If you think about it, like, this movie has so much of In Living Color in it. Like I said before, you know, with the title of it coming from the Homeboy Shopping Network, but then you have his Anton Jackson character in there as well. And then when they're in the jewelry store doing buying the jewelry for the first time with the stolen credit cards, there goes his quote-unquote gay character from Men on Film. There's a lot of In Living Color in this film, and you know, as a In Living Color fan who owns all the DVDs, I'd be sitting back watching this like, whew, you couldn't do none of this stuff today.
I was looking at the handyman car. He had the handyman car low key when he was in the deli, the little bodega trying to get the sandwich, and he went into his handyman joint. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
You couldn't get away with that now.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, bro. They just tried it all, man. That was just gratuitous.
The film opens up with a guy named Ted Forrester, who works for the Dynasty Car Company, murdered by Keith, who is our big bad and his men on the street. And you see them switch a tape before the police arrive to the scene. And I wanted to kind of ask you all about that. How did y'all feel about that opening? Did that kind of set it up? Did that kind of give you an insight of what the film would be about? Or did it pull you in to wonder where they're gonna go with this?
For me, it didn't really tell me what the film was going to be about. Like, I understood that there was something underhanded that was going to take place, but it didn't necessarily show me that there would be some, like, fraud, essentially. They'd be running, like, a fraud operation. You know, I just, like, okay, he just broke this guy's neck on purpose, but it wasn't immediate. You know, they get to it, but it wasn't immediate for me.
I know for me, it kind of reminded me of the setup of a lot of action movies, where they kind of just drop you into this universe where this is where these type of things happen. And then you kind of build the universe out from there in the story. So I was like, okay, like, the setup wasn't that bad for me. I'm like, because it drew me in. I'm like, how are we going to get Damon into this? Mm-hmm. That was my first thought. So I kind of liked it.
For me, it definitely drew me in. Because I was just like, oh shit, this shit escalated real quick. You got the guy fussing, normal traffic shit, you thinking. Then his car gets hit. Then that wasn't enough. Then we had to go break his neck. I was just like, wait, why the fuck? Why did it escalate so quick? What is about to happen? I'm confused. Where are we going into? So just off that alone, I was drawn in. I was like, okay, I gotta see how this is gonna play out, because y'all not making sense to me right now, and I need to make sense. Why did homie just get his neck snapped? I'm confused.
Yo, you know what's funny? When you mentioned that, when they was talking about the beginning, the part that had me messed up, where he's sitting there listening to "The Best Things in Life Are Free," and then he is murdered just like right afterwards. And I'm like, damn. He looked all happy and content with his life. Then he just gets murdered right after that part. I was just like, damn.
Yo, and it was, for me, just saying was, yo, I mean, no, Derek, you said it didn't really tell me what the film was about, but it was like a oh shit moment. Like, walking into a Damon Wayans film, I didn't expect that. I didn't expect brother to get rammed by a car and then his neck snap, and then the immediate switch. I mean, my man gets his neck snapped dead to the world. And then next thing you know, we're into some Damon Wayans hijinks.
I don't know. I was just reading the movie info on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm trying to do a little extra research for the podcast. And, you know, they describe it as him joining the mailroom and to get the girl. And in order to get the girl, he goes on the shopping spree. Now, do we feel like the motivation for him to go on the credit card was just to get the girl? Or was they already hungry?
No, I see it was already hungry, because he gets locked up, correct?
Correct.
And we get that great scene with him in the courtroom with his, with this terrible lawyer. Your Honor, man.
Yo.
That's
Reverend.
He had the Reverend represent him.
Yo, that scene, that was a top five scene. I ain't gonna lie.
What? That scene alone gets me bugging every single time. But then, you know, you get that great comedic scene, but then you get a real scene after that. You know, that's when we see the relationship that he has with Joe Stanos' character, who was the partner of Seymour and Johnny's dad, and just talking about getting his life together and whatnot. So you even see this kind of battle in Johnny early on to continue to get by the way that we've been getting by. But then you see him and Seymour outside of the Dynasty Club trying to sell books. And Seymour is, you know, trying to like, fuck these books, man. Let's go over here and, you know, do this card game and make some real money. But Johnny is like trying, no, I'm trying to be straight. And that's when Stacey Dash kind of walks in to the picture. Of course, you know, epitome of beauty and all that shit. Now I gotta go get this girl. And he literally chases her into the Dynasty Club in real Steve Urkel fashion, like literally following this chick up the stairs. But I don't think that he thinks that he has to get the job to get the girl. It's just more so, yo, I did all this, you know, maybe I see this girl again, maybe I won't. And he's literally just walking out and he sees the job posting and grabs. Now if that helps him to get the girl, cool. But I don't think that's his motivation to get the job there. We already saw him going back and forth between trying to be legit and staying in the life that he's known.
I feel like it's yes and no to that. I feel like he did kind of think he had to get the job to get the girl, but not because she required him to have a job. He felt like he needed the job to be in her proximity, you know, just to be physically close to her. And it also fed into him wanting to better his life, you know, after the cop gave him that lecture and everything about trying to get a job and improving. So he was able to kill two birds with one stone, you know, just by going for that job.
That makes a little bit more sense when you frame it like that, because I don't think I ever took a job trying to get a girl, ever. Like, I'm not following no chick to no job. It's not in my character whatsoever. But I just thought that part was odd. But when you frame it like that, that when you two birds at one stone, that does make sense. Now, real quick, I'm like, Sherrod, I know you about to talk, but like, I did think it was kind of messed up that this dude is a cop and the best job he could get him hooked up with was at a chicken joint in a chicken costume. It's like, bro, it's like, how many people are you connected with? Like, do you not know anybody else? But go ahead, Sherrod.
So back then, they had the cheat code. Go ahead, lie on your resume. So what, you ain't go to school? Say that you went to med school, because these jobs have these requirements that are set up. Yo, you need like 10 years of experience in this, even though you just graduated from grad school and you don't got any experience, but hey, you got the degree. Go ahead and finesse. Go ahead and lie on that application. People aren't going to really check if you went to that school or not. And they're going to go ahead and give you the job.
Or even when he had the interview.
That's that my part. The interview is what got me.
And that's another thing in 2020 that you couldn't do. Because my man had just some wild Tourette going on, you know.
I was wondering about all that shaking, like he had Parkinson's or some shit, because he's just like shaking the whole time.
David was just there just mocking him, and dude, it was just wild, man. Shit was wild,
and it just kept getting worse. It kept sweating more and more. Like, I'm like, somebody said that's a thing. And I'm like, I'm not sure, but like, I believe you.
No, oh, I believe it too. But you know, Damon had to go extra with it. But even in that space, I just remember the guy asking him, are you a relative of Tracy? And he was like, yeah, that's my aunt. I was like, Tracy's a man. this is my aunt's husband. Just like, well, you know, I kind of just want to get this on my own type deal, so don't tell him. Even in that space, that was a way that he's kind of lying to finesse him his way into the job. But I ain't mad at it.
Right. Now you can't do that because they got LinkedIn.
It's
your whole family tree online. I actually appreciated that part, though. I mean, just the gift of gab, the mental and verbal agility that he was able to demonstrate and display in that whole process of getting the job. You know, somebody catch you in the lie right there and then you just smooth, like, don't even miss a beat. Oh, yeah, that's such and such. Like, how many people could actually pull that off, even if right now, even if they weren't able to check you out on LinkedIn? I couldn't pull that off. So that's why I really admired that right there. Because if I'm lying and you caught me, I'm just like a deer in the headlights. So I'm like, well, fuck. You got I guess we got to go home now. I'm out. I'm going to get my stuff.
And, you know, that's kind of like the epitome of Damon's character. Because the whole thing is they're built on scams. So it's like, it doesn't matter if I'm scamming you for a TV, out of deli sandwich, or a job. I got the finesse game on 12. So you put me in any situation and I'm going to talk my way into where I need to be. And I love that about his character, because I feel like it's a lot of people on the streets right now with transferable skills and they just don't know how to transfer it. Mm-hmm. So to see that, and I guess like wanting more people like to look at that and be like, you know what, I could do something like that. And it doesn't have to be so extreme, but like, look at the possibilities.
Right.
That's real. But even in that space, you can see how he can handle himself on his own. But then again, they're greater as a team. But as we'll get into later, you know, Seymour is pretty sloppy on his own. So he needs Big Brother in these scales, because his skills don't exactly transfer as well. So he ends up getting a job in the mailroom as a clerk. Is that where we first meet Charlotte?
Yeah.
That's where we first meet Charlotte.
That's the Darcy friend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But I feel like in that space, that's where Damon Wayans' character, Johnny, that's where he kind of feels like he needs the money to impress Stacey Dash character. What's her name? Amber. Because that's
a white girl name too.
It is. It is.
I was thinking that.
I dare a girl named Amber.
What, you know, Amber and too. Tom. You know, that sounds like, you know, the white couple that stay out on the street with the picket fence and the 2.3 kids and shit. Amber and Tom. But that's where we also that's where he sees Amber with Harry Lennox's character Tom, and that's where I really think that mindset of I need to do something to get her attention, get her away from him, really gets into his head. Because it's I think that was the motivation to actually steal the credit cards. Because even when Chris is showing him the ins and outs of the job, hell, I'm looking at this and like, yo, you could easily steal one of these motherfuckers. I feel like in that first moment, it was like, yo, if he don't steal one of these credit cards, he a dumb motherfucker. Like, you can easily do that. So I think I'll kind of stick to what I said earlier. I don't think the motivation to get the job was squarely on her, but I think the motivation to steal the credit card has something to do.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was all that, yeah. Mm-hmm. See, but I think his motivation to steal, the moment when he decided he was going to steal, was when they got outside and he saw her get in the her boyfriend's car, because he literally said, I gotta get my shit together.
Yep.
You know, so that was the moment where the switch flipped and he's like, yes, I gotta go do something crazy, gotta get this money, she's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I feel like when the thought that you needed to get yourself to another level was first introduced, only because he listened to his brother, did he decide to go back to his old ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's like one of the things they didn't really explore too much. Like they didn't get him pulled back enough. Like I feel like he should have got pulled back at least one other time just to make sure like we knew like this is an actual struggle. But it just seemed too easy for him to go right back to it. But like we all said, you know, he had enough motivation. Now, you know, he seen what he was up against. And, you know, once he told him he had like an $8 outfit with a bottle cap for a hat. I'm like, I know he kind of felt some type of way.
Because
like I've been in that position, you know, where it's like, damn, I ain't brought no clothes in a minute. It's time for me to go jump fresh.
After he gets that, I really like the part after that to first do that trial run. And so he steals the credit card. Then we get the trial run of him and Seymour going to the jewelry store to see if it works. What did they buy?
A ring.
A ring?
Yeah, it was a ring. Yeah.
But did Seymour get something too?
Nah, because that was like the men on film part of the movie. So they were acting like a couple.
Yeah, and yo, I don't know his name, but the dude that played the store worker, his reactions to everything killed it.
He was gold. He put up a lot of shots in that scene.
Yeah. I just guess the only thing that really comes out of him thinking that he needs the money to impress Amber was the fact that he actually didn't need the money. He just needed to be better than Tom.
I put some of this on her because when they were in the restaurant and Damian Wayne's character, Johnny, was making fun of Stacey Dash's boyfriend. What's his name? Tom?
Tom.
He's the character name. So when Johnny was making fun of Tom in the restaurant and he got mad and his only comeback, his only retort was to be like, he can't afford you. And she didn't shut that down. She just looked at him when he's looking at her like with the look like, yo, is that true? Like, are you one of those? You expensive like that?
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't say anything. She just made that stare at him and just like, it almost looked like she was saying, yeah, he's got a point. You don't look like you can afford me. That was what I took from her, the look on her face.
Yeah, I was expecting Shorty to put her foot down and read him his rights. And she was just like, yeah, you're right. I was like, this bitch.
She's to let him get that off and don't correct it. That's why, you know, he just, I feel like that helped push him. She gave him that nudge in that direction.
Did she kind of like put her foot down like in the next scene?
Yeah. And I was
about okay. To cause like, it's all right.
That's behind closed doors.
But it's like,
I never thought about what you said there until now, because to me, it was always, he went in on her he went in on Johnny in front of Amber, but then the next scene, she's going off and really putting her foot down in that next scene. But yeah, up until the day I didn't think about it, I felt that would have been more appropriate, not in the office space, but in that restaurant.
I think y'all might be right if Stacey Dash was a traditional black woman who would definitely not take that shit right then and there. But if we're going to take the character Amber, played by Stacey Dash, she probably didn't know how to react to being in that moment. Because if you think about who that character is, she's probably grown up being subservient to the man because the man brings in the money and like that's all she's known. Probably grow up two-parent household. Like you could just tell the aesthetic. I'm kind of just reading into the character. So I'm, you know, maybe just projections if you call it. But I wouldn't have expected her to say anything in public because that type of relationship, they mainly handle stuff between each other behind closed doors. You don't let folks in your business, a little bit more private. And because the actual conflict was between Tom and Damon, that really wasn't her place. I think she was just kind of just caught in the thought, you know, for lack of a better term. And after the reflection, that's when she said, you know what? He was right. Or you're wrong. I got to get out of here because as we can see, Tom was an asshole throughout the whole movie. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't a surprise that it was going to go there. He definitely was treating her like property, always.
Or just the other thing that I can think about in this space is, you know, when they're back in the office and Tom tells her to collect her things and go back to the ghetto.
He said, no, I'll send you back to the projects. That's what he said. I remember that shit. That's just,
you know, maybe in that space, Amber was in between worlds, if that makes sense. Like, where she came from, she might have handled a situation totally different. But now in the space where she's trying to be in Tom's world, it's not appropriate. And really getting caught up and not knowing what to do in that moment. Because if you look back at the movie and you look at her face in that moment when he says that Johnny can't afford her, she ain't looking at Tom. Like, she looking directly at Johnny. And like, and her face is like, on her face, you can tell she feel bad and she wants to say something, but she's hesitant where she is. Or at least that's how I read it.
See, but I guess that's the difference. Like, I could tell she felt bad in her face, but did she feel bad because of what Tom said, or did she feel bad because he's right? You know, that's the look. That's why the look was so confusing to me. You know, it was that classic Stacey Dash blank stare. But, you know, but I couldn't tell which way it was leaning. Like, you know, he's got a point, or yeah, he just talked about me like I'm not shit. I'm gonna have to go off on him when we get home. You couldn't really read it one way or the other, at least not for me. No, for sure. Can we talk about how, like, what, right after that, essentially, I couldn't tell if it was a fast forward or not, but they showed the next time that Johnny and Amber are walking out of the building, and everyone's got new couples. Tom's got a new girlfriend, and that's the last we see of Tom, right? they give him a little split thing in the frame. They show him walking out to off to the right somewhere, and he's got his white girl, and then we don't see him anymore. But like, everybody moved on so quickly. Like,
it's escalated. I think, wasn't the next scene with them? I know.
Why be a white girl? Why?
Well, I mean, come on, you knew that.
Come one. On now. Yeah. Come on.
Well, what Kanye tell you? When
been,
you get on, you
too, mean, what do you mean? What do you mean, why a white girl? You know exactly why I'd pick a white girl. No.
Even in that breakup moment in the office, I felt like we were going to at least see him one more time and with somebody else. So we saw him with a white girl. I was like, yo, that makes sense. I mean, it don't make sense, but for a movie in the 90s with that kind of character, it was like, yo, yeah. That's how that was going to work out.
Right.
But then was that an immediately, because I remember like right after Amber and Tom's scene, they go to a scene with Johnny and Seymour about, you know, Johnny's pissed off because he felt like he should have knocked him out. And then next time we see Amber and Johnny together, he's at her door. And yo, that was an hilarious impression.
Yes.
Of Tom. Complete with the joke of however many inches he was. Yo, yes. Was But then you're right. Yo, there's this quick transition of now Johnny and Amber are together and they're doing all the things, and then you get that last moment of, you know, seeing both couples outside the Dynasty Club. So yeah, that happened rather quickly. Almost feel like Tom had that white girl on deck.
Yeah, she was in the wings, definitely. Definitely circling around, because he was the top Negro in the building. But I'm about to say, like, since we had this part while we're talking about like the fast forward, I think this is where I'm going to introduce my argument for this movie probably being 15 to 20 minutes longer, because I feel like every single montage in the movie was trash. Mm-hmm. And I felt like a couple of them things could have been pulled out into a scene and then maybe just tighten up the montages, and the movie would have had a little bit more cohesiveness, because I literally had a problem with every single montage in the movie. And it's really hard to get past, because it's like smack dab in the middle of the movie and it's like moving the storyline along, but they don't do a good job of explaining what's going on. You know, like, what is this progression? It's kind of just like splashed together. Like it was a real bad edit for me, but that's kind of like the hardest part of this movie to get past.
I get your point. Kind of backtracking a little bit, you know, when Johnny starts in the mail room doing that training space with Chris, that's where we meet Keith. But then we see this interaction between Keith and Chris, because Chris was questioned by the police. Keith's trying to figure out what he said. Chris is shaking up, but he didn't know nobody was going to get killed. Referencing the dude that was broken up out of his neck at the end of the movie. So as Detective Walsh is continuing to investigate this murder and keeps interacting with, you know, folks in the mailroom, Chris specifically, then out of the blue, you get this montage. I think it's probably one of the ones you're talking about, CL, is when Chris is murdered.
Yeah.
And it literally just came. And I feel like two montages were close together.
Yeah, they were really close.
You had the montage of Amber and Johnny getting together and all that. And then it almost immediately, you get that montage of Chris being murdered. And I feel like there were some questions there that were never unanswered. It's like, what did Chris specifically say or do to warrant him being killed?
Yeah. Why was he a threat?
Why are we moving to this space? Unless the motivation of killing Chris was to do what Keith said later. It's like, yo, I hired you. I wanted you in this position. I'm getting Chris out the way. I want you in this position. I want you to be my guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think maybe if that was explained more, because I think just in that statement of him just being emphatic and like, I hired you. He never said why. Why did you hire me? You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Right.
Like that wasn't explained. And I feel like adding more to that, the montage didn't help, and that statement not being explained really hurt the process of the film moving forward.
I definitely agree with that. They could have explained that part more. But I do understand why Chris got killed, because he demonstrated himself to be weak, you know? And so once the guy figured, if I'm putting myself in Keith's shoes, right? I saw him talk to the cops, and I already know this guy has no backbone. So he's going to crumble whenever someone puts pressure on him. So I can't trust this guy. So what? He talked to the cops. That's it. You know, you got to take him out before he starts spilling all the secrets. So that's probably why he got taken out. At least that's what I thought.
I feel that. But why getting involved with that dude in the first place?
Probably had no choice. I mean, when dudes are weak like that, you know, you can, they don't get into crime because they want to. A lot of times they get forced into it. It's like, hey, you're weak. You're going to do this for me. And you ain't going to say no about it. You got nothing else to say. Just do it. I'll tell you when you can stop.
Him a man up in the toilet.
Man. Had him sitting there sobbing, too. He was just sitting there sobbing. That wasn't a cry. That was like a sob. Just
that's a whole nother level of cry right there.
It was like, you know, get in there and rock back and forth. That kind of thing. I was like, when Johnny makes that decision, no, I'm out. I'm getting out. I'm not doing this no more. Seymour is not buying it, or he ain't feeling it. So, like a dumbass, he picks up the credit cards and he tries to go do the damn thing on his own and gets caught up. Which that wasn't a montage, but it goes along with what CL's saying about shit moving too fast. because my man grabs the card, tries to, you know, go back to the jewelry store, buy some more stuff, gets caught. Next thing you know, he's being interrogated by a cop that would probably be getting a Black Lives Matter rally on him these days because he fucked him up. He fucked Seymour up for no damn reason.
Oh my gosh.
Like that. No,
he was too intense. They didn't justify his intensity.
It was just in a lot that just happened. He gets roughed up. Next thing you know, he's in a undercover sting.
I think that was purposely, though.
He trying to trap Keith. And then, yo, it was just a lot going on in that space. And now Seymour is fucked up. You know, he's out there in the game with Keith.
Yeah, that scene right there where he was trying to get Keith caught up. It was, I feel like they needed to either do that over or take it out altogether because it was terrible. Like, it made no sense. Like, how I'm dealing with your brother. I got no business with you. Where right. do you come from? Out of nowhere. Hey, man, look, I got these credit cards, man. We get these plane tickets or whatever the scam was. Yeah. You know, you just come out of nowhere with the perfect scam. Like, that made no sense. Anybody going to be like, yeah, you trying to set me up.
Yeah.
They should have done something better with that to make it believable, because that wasn't believable at all.
Yeah, they really needed to have a little bit more rapport before he just came in with like a super big perfect score. Like, come on, bro. Like, that never happens. On the first one, my first time meeting you, bro, or me sitting down to do business with you, like, nah, get out of here. Get out my face. Like, you the feds. I know you the feds.
Like, his whole end was Johnny told me.
Yeah, you setting your brother up for failure right there. If you're talking about, yeah, my brother told me everything. I know. That tells me, okay, now I got to kill your brother. He talks.
Exactly.
Like, what you mean? In no way does it make sense.
Throw your brother underneath the bus. Yep. Sounds about right.
Keith just sitting back the whole time like, I don't know what you're talking about. Whatever.
I love the way Keith was playing that off.
Yo,
I love
that. He was so cool.
So cool with it, man. Not bothered at all.
It's like, fuck out my face.
But
like,
the thing about the cop situation, so Seymour gets caught. This is where this is sloppy. I don't know if it's sloppy in the writing, sloppy in the direction, whatever. But there has to be some communication going on, you would think, with the police. Why would this dude question Seymour about his crime? Seymour give up Keith, but then this guy does this whole undercover thing trying to trap Keith without telling Detective Walsh.
Yeah, that's some plot holes for your ass.
It definitely was. It's like, where did this whole other team come from? You know, I felt like if you're gonna have the other team of cops, they should have been snooping around earlier. So that way, when they did catch Seymour, it would have made a little bit more sense. Oh, they was the guys underneath the main guy, and they was helping him out. So they definitely need a little bit more time for that. But real quick, why did Seymour have to jump through the glass? I could have swore that was a door next to it. And he still went through the glass.
I'm sorry. There's nothing about Marlon Wayans that makes me think he's going to make it through jumping through glass anyway.
Especially at the jewelry store, bro. You're not getting through that glass. You would have bounced off that guy.
I feel like that was false storytelling in itself, because in real life, if he would have tried to jump at that window, he would have bounced back.
He definitely would have bounced back.
So yeah.
Locked his head.
But there you go. Just trying to add a little bit more action.
Yeah, that was a little overboard.
You really didn't need it.
It was gratuitous.
Because you got enough action towards the end.
Yeah. And I'm about to say, when we get there, like, shouts out to them. That shit wasn't that bad. I see how your boy got Rambo off that. If that last 15 minutes got you Rambo, okay. I can see
you that. Know, and like I said, I'm not mad at the sequels. I'm like, hell, we already damn near there anyway. So Seymour is basically kidnapped by Keith. Did he get away? Who got knocked
out?
Yeah,
he jumped out the car. He
jumped out of the car. But then Keith goes back to get Johnny. Big shootout there in the Dynasty Club. And then Detective Walsh goes to Johnny's house because he found out that he's mixed. Well, he already knew, but it's just because Seymour had got caught up, that they were into something. So Walsh finds all the receipts that Johnny used credit cards for, goes back to Dynasty Club looking for him. Then that's when Detective Walsh gets shot. Detective Walsh said, "You ain't a cop, but go get that motherfucker." Go be like your daddy.
Yo. Okay, I guess we had enough levity in the story for that. We're gonna let that one slide.
Just had to point that out. But like, as he's chasing Keith, can I shout out my man? Now he goes by Garfield. I don't know why the hell that's his acting name. But the dark skinned gentleman that was in prison with Johnny,
the eye patch.
Oh, the swole dude.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
And we shot that dude out.
Double shot, like, yo, killed it both scenes.
Yeah.
Not only in the jail, but my man damn near got ran over at the end. And was still, it was like, yo.
Still pissed. Yo, that was some real like Curb Your Enthusiasm type joke threading right there. Because like that was way at the beginning. You had forgot about that dude. Yep. And for him to be right there in that moment was just perfect.
Johnny gets away from Garfield. I don't know what his name in the movie was. Ends up getting Keith at, like, what the hell was that? What kind of factory was that? To this day, I don't know what the hell that is.
I think it was a paper mill or something.
They got those in New York a lot because the snow's up there. So that's salt.
Okay.
Okay.
For the street. Yeah, they keep it stored up.
I didn't want to assume, you know.
Yeah, they don't know about that down south. They don't know about putting salt on the roads and whatnot. I mean,
we know about it, but when there's snow here and they put down quote unquote salt, shit looks more like flour. When I'm looking at when I'm looking at them rolling around and that kind of salt, more money, it's like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, salt crystals.
I ain't seen crystals that big on my streets in Charlotte. We just don't get it like that. But that was, yo, for Damon Wayans, and even like a character actor like Keith is, that was a pretty decent ending action scene.
Great. That was a great, like, scene altogether, you know, from the car chase all the way until the very, you know, part where they get to the, I guess, what's this, the salt factory.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a solid sequence that had me entertained. I was like, oh shit, like this, something is happening. Like, I'm engaged right now. You know, like I felt that. I was like, and I really was not expecting it, you know, from the previous pacing of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was everything, like I said, it was montages, and everything was a little bit slow, but then this, it was like the pacing was proper. It was kind of realistic now, besides him jumping off the building and on the truck, you know what I'm saying? That was some real skill. Like, I guess he just was not afraid because he thought he was going to die either way.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess at that moment, you got the adrenaline, but man, I can't really be mad at nothing in that part of the movie.
Yeah, I like the way Keith was kind of playing with his food, so to speak, when he was beating up Johnny. You know, when they get to the factory, you kind of beating them up. Keith, that was real to me. You know, the way, because
yeah,
get somebody down there, you know they done, in your mind, you're like, oh, this guy done for. Let me give him a few more. And then you think it's over. Instead of shooting him, he's shooting next to him just to scare him. Almost like the cartoon character shooting at your feet, making you dance, yeah, or whatever. I was just like, my God, he won't stop playing with this food. Yo, just go on and finish him off. So I love that part. That he was just playing with him, you know, real sadistic.
That final exchange, the words between the two of them. Keith's little catchphrase in this movie is still one of my favorite lines in cinema, period. Going back to when he was in the office, when he first let Johnny know that, yeah, I caught you, motherfucker. I put the cards there. He's like, yo, if you fuck me.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole tone of his voice, his inflection, he's perfect. That's his line.
I was like, boy, yo, check, I'm still a net.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So the whole "if you fuck me" and then Johnny returning, like, "yo, remember when I told you to kiss my ass? Kiss my ass." Next thing you know, my man dangling above the salt, gone. So, yo, I really love that ending to Keith. And then we got a goofy ending, which is always good.
Yeah, ending wasn't that bad. I could take that one. I did like Seymour getting his comeuppance because, you know, after you kick a girl out like the morning after and tell her to take the train, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't be mad if something else happened to you, bro. Like, that shit gonna come back.
We can rewind on that. Like, if I gotta highlight Marlon's best moment,
absolutely though,
is when he woke up. You could not do that today. Let's just go ahead.
I mean, you could.
Come on. We all bro, you, know you why.
Definitely, you definitely could, man. If you're making a comedy movie, man, bro, I think you could still go there.
Man, come on, man. They would be all on whoever did it today. All you did it, it'll be some kind of dark skin debate and whatnot.
If it made her feel better, get an ugly light skinned chick. Like,
okay.
It doesn't matter, bro. Yeah. Like,
or just let the female off. Do it to the guy. You could definitely pull that off.
You could pull that off. Let the female do it to the guy.
But, I mean, if we talking about favorite scenes with Marlon Wayans, mine is when he's starting to put them beer goggles on. When he in the club and he start rationalizing, she ain't that bad. Honestly, I must be drunk. And then, next thing you know, he's like, yeah, we're finna do this. Like...
Is that how y'all process it when y'all got your beer goggles on?
Don't do that.
Yeah, when you starting to put them on. Oh no.
No, that's what y'all do.
You know what? What happens is like the standards of, I ain't gonna say the standards, but like
your preferences, like
the preferences are a little bit more wider. You just don't care as much. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, she missing like four teeth, but you know, big, like, you know, but you just start wrestling like
off that.
That's what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? Like, that might be a plus at the end of the night.
That's the one benefit about, you know, dudes will find a positive in anything. Positive in anything.
After Johnny kills Keith, Johnny's in the hospital nursing his shot shoulder. And Seymour comes in and, Lord Jesus, will Seymour ever be right? Did my man really go in somebody's dying room and steal they flower?
I mean, he...
I know you're not about to amen this. Actually,
sure. He just can't get right.
Come on.
So he ain't need it.
No. You're about to give a pass to this man. I mean, yeah, he was like, yo, he ain't need it. He died.
He ain't going to use them. So, okay. You know what? I'm not. It was wrong.
But it all came back to him, though. Hey, that's like the thing about it. It came back to him.
He got it back on him because, you know, my man still in the hospital, still trying to scheme, trying to sue the Dynasty Club. But little does he know, behind that curtain. So we got two happily ever afters in a black movie. Ain't that grand?
I got a question about that before you go on about Crystal, right? Or Charlotte. That's the girl's name. Charlotte.
Okay. Charlotte.
Yeah. I got a question about how would you feel being the ugly black woman in the movie, or being the ugly black man in this case? How would you be okay to play that role? Like, I gotta be the stereotypically, I'm dark skinned. My hair is jacked up and they just making me look ugly as hell and undesirable. Would you be able to play that role?
That's a tough one. Only because sometimes being the ugly, and I'm just going to be real. A lot of times I've rarely seen an ugly white woman role.
Right.
Like, I feel like if there's
they have them in some rom-coms, but go ahead.
Yeah, but then, you know, I feel like that ugly white girl has turned out to be beautiful or something at the end, or, you know, something is redeeming to, you know, rise above, you know, what she lacks in physical beauty. I don't think that is that space is given for Black women. So I can understand as a Black woman how it would be totally hard to play a role knowing that you are that ugly Black woman. It could also be a career killer before it's a real starter. Because if you think about all, God, and I hate that I'm saying it like this, but you think about all the Black women who have fulfilled those roles, like you can name way more who you haven't seen after the fact than the ones that you have seen. I mean, let's be real. In the 80s, Whoopi Goldberg got probably the ugly Black female role. But she's Whoopi Goldberg. She was able to rise above that. Let's just be real. Whoopi Goldberg is a generational talent. I feel like she can rise above anything. Everybody's not that lucky. And I think about somebody like, her name is Alma Yvonne, who played Charlotte. Like, where have you seen her?
Nowhere.
Where have you seen the little girl that played younger Celie?
Yeah.
The only other thing that I've really seen her in is something that Whoopi Goldberg did after the fact, and she cast her in the movie. You know, so I think it's harder for, you know, I think as a Black man, we can overcome that role. But I think being that ugly person, it affects Black women more in Hollywood than anybody else.
Well, yeah, I can definitely see that given history. Black women already have such a negative narrative. So it's always been made to seem dark skin wasn't right. It's not natural. It's not okay. It already has that negative demeanor. And you got some of the characteristics of having big nose, big this, smaller this. And it was all shown so negative. And then those parts end up being highlighted. Your big nose is now ugly. It's not beautiful. And it's definitely deeper for women. To go ahead and try to even overcome that type of role. Does it mean essentially that's some women's reality. That is who society sees them as.
Just to kind of put my two cents in, I do see, you know, where historically it's been a little problematic, you know, the colorism just amongst us in the community. You know, we've all had some issues with image, you know, self-hatred, however you want to frame it. You know, but to me, like, I think, you know, part of it was her being the less attractive friend in the movie, but also like her personality was kind of trash too. And so like, I wasn't attracted to her just because of how she acted, because, you know, I kind of like dark-skinned girls, you know what I'm saying? Like, in my previous iteration, like, you know, Lupita's nice looking, you know? I don't have any problem with those. So I didn't look at her as the ugly friend. I'm just like, you really not my vibe, and you're not what I'm striving for. And I would have been just like Johnny, I would have just passed quick. And I'd have been like, you know what? To get to where I need to be, I'm probably going to have to make a change. So, yeah, I do see some of the problematic stuff that could be pulled from it, but I do see in most situations, it's, you know, either you got some personality quirks that's making you very unattractive. Now, what you look like on top of it usually is like a double down. It's like, and you not as cute as the girl that's over there. It's like, what do I really got to work with? You know what I'm saying? If you kind of look at, I mean, I'm going to say Boomerang is a bad example, but if you look at what Eddie goes through between Halle Berry and what's your girl name? I'm blanking. Robin Givens. It's like he chose personality. Like, what was the fit? Because Robin Givens was really more like him and just, you know, really didn't have the emotional connect. And your girl seemed like she was just a little too thirsty. You know, like he wanted to chase something. And, you know, like, that's what I'm like, when I see it, it's like, I feel what you're saying, Derek, like, as far as some of that being problematic, I probably wouldn't have a problem doing it with my own image, because I'm confident in myself, like, it's a part, and I'm going to play it to the best of the ability. And then I'm over here looking at, your girl, what's her name? Alma Yvonne. And like, she's done a lot of TV work. Of course, she hasn't been on another like big budget movie in a prominent role, but she has a lot of producing and acting credits. So, you know what I'm saying? It's not like she wasn't able to make a living out in Hollywood doing what she loves to do. So I kind of feel like it was fine in my book. I'll just put it like that.
All right, it's time for the segment of the show that I like to call And the Award Goes To. Each week, once we wrap up our review of a film, we'll end off by having each co-host give that film an award based off their personal enjoyment. This is how we'll do it. If a co-host loves the film, they'll give it an image award. If the co-host feels that it was good but not great, we'll just slide it down the line and give it a Soul Train award. If the film was just all right to a co-host, we'll hook it up with a Source award. But if the film is pretty much the equivalent of the movie being Red and the co-host being Debo, oh, we're going to knock the shit out of it with a BET award.
Who up first? What you got?
All right, I'll jump on it. For me, I'd give it a Soul Train award. I really enjoyed it. It was funny, you know. I had obvious plot holes and things that we talked about. And for those reasons, that's why I'm not going to give it the Image Award. You know, if they could have explained a little bit more, you know, and not just tried to montage their way through the movie to show progression and just actually explain some things out, it could get an Image Award. But for what it was, Soul Train Award, which ain't bad. It's a good movie. So
I'm going to give it the Image Award for the simple fact that there's a very rare opportunity where I'll go back and watch a movie multiple times. Like I said, when we decided we were going to do this movie, that was my second time intentionally watching it. And then I watched it four other times after the fact. It was funny. It kept me engaged. It left me wanting just a little bit more. So yeah, that comes down to really explaining how we got from A to Z in the situation, but I'm still have to go ahead and give it the Image. It gave me everything I needed from the actors' chemistries, and I love the plot. So I guess I'm a sucker for that.
Okay. I think I'm going to give it a Soul Train Award because I felt the movie was very solid, had a lot of things that I really could appreciate, you know, like Sherelle said, multiple watches, because I actually started the movie, fell asleep on it because I was tired. I mean, I was interested, but I was just tired and probably under the influence too, just being honest. But when I went to go rewatch the movie, I had to make a decision. Do I start from the beginning or pick up where I left off? And right then I was like, I want to start this from the beginning. And anytime I feel like that about a movie, I know it has some good rewatchability and I really enjoyed it. So definitely a Soul Train Award winner in my books.
I'll round it out with another Soul Train Award.
I knew I was gonna be the only one. It was
true. Standards high.
Solid film. One of my favorite movies from the 90s is Damon Wayans. Damon Wayans, at the height of being Damon Wayans, got all the great characters from In Living Color represented in the film. Just enjoyable moment after enjoyable moment. It's okay. Why are you being salty? Because you're the only one.
I'm not being saucy. I'm just appreciating, you know, my beliefs.
Bro, it's supposed to be like the top movies. Like, you got to reserve that.
No, because you know what? I'm also taking it for what it was worth back then. What I know now, knowing what I need to look for as a viewer, it would have got the Image. So
maybe if it had Kadeem Hardison in it, I would have gave it an Image.
It might have gotten the top one if Kadeem was in it. But I can't get past the directing and like the whole editing of the movie. It was like I'm picking nits, but like it really messed with my eyes, you know. Like I trust me, I'm the component of 90-minute movies all day, every day. But this movie definitely needed like 15 to 20 more minutes just to just lay out a little bit more plot and, you know, just make it a good movie and just instead of a funny movie. Like, I feel like they cut it to be a funny movie instead of a good movie.
That's real.
Okay.
Sherelle's just like...
She's not having none of it.
All right. So let's go ahead and figure out what we're going to do for episode 2. So I'm going to throw it to CL to pick me for episode 2 because out of all of us, he has the most significant connection to the number 2 right now, you know, considering what's going on in his life. So...
Yeah.
What you got for us?
You got them twins on the way.
Yeah.
Man.
Congratulations on that.
I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, congratulations.
So, what you got for us for episode 2, man?
So, okay. Ooh. Now, all right. Since how ready are y'all to do something like Coming to America?
Always ready.
Like, how, before I suggest that, it's like, how ready are you to do it?
We could do it right now. I'd be okay. Yeah,
I was about to say, we could do it right now.
That's my movie.
Okay. So I'm looking at my list, and like, that's the one that jumps out. It's like, you know what? I just want to watch it. So, if there's no objections to that, we can do Coming to America next. We can come out with a banger.
Look. This might be a long episode.
It might be. We might have to set some rules where, like, the episode can't be longer than the movie.
Because if it's something that I can talk, we can talk about some Coming to America. So if that's the decision, that's the decision we can make right now.
Let's make that decision right now. I'm with it.
All right, to put a bow on episode 1 of the Madcap Review, we'd like everyone to go to the show's Linktree account at linktr.ee/madcapreview. Again, that's linktr.ee/madcapreview to get all the show's social media information. Follow the show's accounts, follow our personal accounts. We appreciate any feedback that you have and let us know what movies you want us to talk about. We hope to be very engaging and interactive with our listeners, and please don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Leave us that good review if you think we've earned it, and we'll see you next week with that Coming to America review. Peace.
Once upon a time, in a faraway kingdom, lived a handsome prince. He was attended by devoted servants.
Do you think perhaps just once I might use the bathroom by myself?
Most amusing, sir.
Waitress!
And engaged by royal decree.
Why? Why can't I find my own wife?
We've gone to a great deal of trouble to select for you a very fine wife.
I want a woman that's going to arouse my intellect as well as my loins.
Where will you find such a woman?
In America.
So he traveled across the sea to the land of opportunity, which is where the fairy tale ends and our story begins.
Behold, Simi! Life! Real life! And sing
that we have been denied for far too long. We're in New York now. Let us dress as New Yorkers.
I feel like a complete idiot.
Have either of you ever had any fast food work experience before?
Certainly not.
This will be our first job in the United States. I am Akeem.
It's nice to meet you, Akeem.
I have recently been placed in charge of garbage.
That's good to know.
Oh my goodness, it is you! Greetings, Your Highness.
Who was that?
Eddie Murphy.
Just the man I met in the restroom.
Arsenio Hall. In a comedy fable of royal romance.
When I look at these contestants for the Miss Black Awareness pageant, I feel good.
Apparently, these are the best women Queens has to offer. Pick one and let's go home.
I want to tear you apart. And your friend, too.
Coming to America.